right, another Tuesday night, Kufar Akbar, everybody. This is Radio Free Kafiristan, a radio program dedicated to rightly dividing the truth between Christianity and Islam. We examine the evidence for both of these faiths in order to arrive at the truth that leads us to this end. Thus go I. Shalom. Peace and blessings. This is your humble host, Eric Thecker, for coming to live from the cavernous depths of the Kafir Cave in Dar al-Harb, Kafiristan. We are here every Tuesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. And for my friends in Jerusalem, it is 1 a.m. Go to bed if you haven't already. I am, again, once again, live casting here on Zoom. I'll be posting this up on my Radio Free Kafiristan site. If it doesn't crap out on me again, last week it just died about an hour into the program. So I just posted the Blog Talk Radio link, hopefully tonight, because I got a couple videos that I want to show. It won't, and we'll stay live and we'll be good. I'm trying to make sure it stays up over here as we go along. Normally I'm joined by my good friend Paul Sutliff, but he is going to be out for the next several weeks because he's teaching an apologetics class on Tuesday nights. I guess Tuesday nights was the only night of the week that he could do it, but hey, you know, Paul's got to do what Paul's going to do, and I hope God blesses him for it. Remember, a Kafir is someone who does not heed the beliefs and prescriptions held by the religion of Islam. This is not according to this Kafir. That is according to the New Encyclopedia of Islam. That's not according to me. That's according to your own sources, so leave me alone when it comes to using that term, because you use that term, a lot of Muslims, a lot of militant. I don't want to create a new category, but a lot of militant Muslims, more people who are, let's put it this way, people who are more devout in their faith will refer to the infidel, people like myself, as the kufar, as the kafir. And it's meant to be a derogatory term, kind of on the lines of the N-word. And so if you're going to use that term against the infidel, the kufar, well, then I'm just going to kind of embrace it. So thank you for the term. Kafiristan, the place where the kafirs live, is Dar al-Harb. Al-Harb, Dar al-Harb is the house of war. These are the lands that are not ruled by the Sharia. Dar al-Islam, the house of peace, are those lands. That would be lands like Pakistan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, etc. stands. All of those stands are Dar al-Islam, where they can live in their Sharia-compliant utopias if they want to. But please don't try to bring that to this country. If you want to call in tonight, the call-in number, just like every Cedar Rapids Tuesday, is area code 319-527-6706. Let me say it again, area code 319-527-6706. We got a big plate of stuff to be shelling out this evening. I got a monologue, and then we're going to do some Bible bits, and then we got Why Not Ask a Muslim, a couple news bits, and then we're going to ride that truth train. And I only have an hour and a half to do it. I'm kind of amazed at how fast that time goes. I mean, it just flies on by. The next thing you know, it's 5 o'clock here, Central Standard Time, and the next thing I know, it's 6:30. And I'm like, what in the heck just happened? I'm sure you don't feel that way. Some of you guys, would this guy ever shut his mouth? But not tonight. Tonight, I'm going to open a book here to show you what we're looking ahead for this show and for others. I've been doing some planning with a couple fellow peeps like myself about what to do about this show, what to do about countering a lot of the propaganda that we hear from Islamic apologists. And we've tried a lot of things that haven't worked very well, and for a number of reasons. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to think about, okay, what's this show going to look like a year from now? What's the show supposed to look like 2 years from now, 5 years from now? You know, is it going to die on the vine like some would hope so, or is it going to expand and grow as some would dread? I've never really considered trying to grow the show audience before. I've basically left that to the Global Patriot Radio Network. I don't think that, let me just put it this way. I think we can do more, and we're going to do more. So there's going to be an announcement coming in the coming weeks about growing this network, growing the audience, and pushing the word out there. If you listen to this radio network, you know we have seven shows 7 days a week, and we start on Sundays with the Real Interfaith Dialogue. This past Sunday, the show was about anachronisms that we find in the Quran, and I tell you, there is so, and I'm going to cover that in the writing the truth train at the end of the show. There are so many things that in the Quran that just are not true. They're demonstrably not true, but yet, 1.6 billion people disregard them, completely ignore them. No problem. Ew, Muhammad, we know he was a prophet of God. Well, how do we know that? Well, he said so, of course. So we're going to ride the truth train towards the end of the show. But we talked about this on Sunday. We were there for 2 hours, had quite a few people on. It was a good time. If you listen to the show on Mondays, that's our flagship show, Mama Mia No Sharia. That's with Big Al and Vito Esposito. Tuesdays, of course, is here, Radio Free Kafir Stand. On Wednesdays, we have Hank Jones and Poly Sports. This is where he mixes politics and sports. It's kind of like mixing politics and religion. You just don't do it at the supper table. Well, he does sports and politics, which I guess is kind of a equitably poisonous bag. And then we got the Sutliff Van Port. I got to get that flow. But that's with Paul Sutliff on Thursday evening, same time, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Fridays, it's Islam in Focus with Dr. Andrew Harad. That's it. I just listened to it in podcast a couple days. Guy is an absolute brain. And then on Saturdays, late at night, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you have Revealing the Truth about Islam with Usama Duckbook and Christy Johnson. I reached out to Christy yesterday via instant message to see if maybe we could do a show on Sunday with Usama coming on there. We've had Sam Shimon on there. And I would like to actually get CP on there, Christian Prince on there sometime too. But again, these are things that all are in the works, in the plans, and we'll be making announcements soon. But this program is not growing like I would like it to, so we're going to become a little proactive. As I mentioned, the focus has been Facebook, which is, you know, the second most popular site on the internet, and I've had some good response, some bad response, some, you know, it's just up and down. Plus you got the constant harassment of haters out there trying to keep you from saying anything. So we'll be looking elsewhere. We'll be looking at Instagram. We'll be looking at Twitter. Some of the conversations I've had with some people. We're going to be David Wood made a video a couple weeks ago, and I've had a couple folks were reaching out to David. He talked about creating some type of evil empire. I don't know. Maybe that would be some good intro music if that ever did kick off. But anyways, creating some type of apologetics empire, and that's what we're kind of leading into. We're going to try to play off of his lead, I think. But more importantly, we want to find a way to push these shows out without watching people lose their mind reporting it for spam. And oh, by the way, speaking of which, I just wanted to say that you know, when I came into work today, not yesterday, because yesterday was a federal holiday, nobody mentioned anything about hate speech. I've been told that I was going to be surprised when I walked into work this morning, and because I was being reported for hate speech, and my school district was going to come down on me. If I would have a job at the end of the day? You know, I did make a call, and nobody's received anything. Now, I'm not sure, because last time somebody talked about sending in information to get me reported for hate speech or getting fired for it or whatever, The individual couldn't even spell Cedar Rap. I'm sorry, folks, but that's exactly how he's trying to get people to mass report me. And he says, Eric Zephyr from Cedar Rapids, SEAIW. It was, I'm sorry. But anyway, okay. That's the harassment part about it. I mean, I'm sorry. I should joke like that. Anyway, we're going to amp up our game here coming in the next few months. Not going to let the cat out of bag, but things are going to be a changing for the better. For my friends who have been listening and been supportive, thank you for your confidence. And for those haters out there reporting me, this network to YouTube, to Facebook, to Twitter, to Blog Talk Radio, to Instagram, this is going to be great. It really is. I hope you enjoy the ride on this true train when Muhammad is exposed for being what he was. All the lies that are told in the Quran are exposed for what they are, and Islam is exposed for what many of its followers do. And that's what I do on this radio show and others, and that's going to continue. So the focus is going to be building. And we talked about this. What do we want the focus to be? And the focus I want to be is building the faith of Christians. That's what I want the focus to be. Because a lot of times Christians aren't equipped to answer some of these stupid questions that come up because they're not equipped to know what the Bible actually says. Because a lot of these, I would say 90% of the assertions made by Islamic polemicists against the Bible are simply just flat out wrong, flat out lies, flat out out of context quotes. But Christians don't realize this. They don't realize that somebody would deliberately try to distort what the Bible teaches in order to further. I mean, because after all, I mean, as a Christian, you wouldn't go out and lie about the Quran, about what the Quran says, to make an argument against the Quran. You wouldn't do that. You wouldn't do it knowingly anyway. But for an Islamic apologist or polemicist, they do it every time I have them on that show, almost without exception. There's, you know, sometimes they do represent the Bible accurately. But let me just give you a good instance of this. I'm going to go to the book of Jeremiah because this is so stupid that it, you know, some days you're like, are you really going to try to make this assertion? So let me go to the book of Jeremiah, chapter 8, Jeremiah, chapter 8, verse 8, and let's see here, I want the NET, okay, chapter 8, verse 8, and here's what they said. They said, they'll say that, okay, the Bible even tells you that it's been changed, it's been altered. It says it right there in Jeremiah 8, chapter 8. And I was doing a debate with, I think this was when I was debating Radush, and he made this assertion. I'm like, what are you talking about? Let me read this. And it says, how can you say we are wise? We have the law of the Lord. The truth is those who teach it have used their writings to make it say what it does not really mean. He's saying, see, right there, it's saying that the scribes are changing the Bible. No, it doesn't. The truth is those who teach it have used their writings to make it say what it does not really mean. So that's just a classic example of what goes on in these games that they play. So my main focus is to drill down and equip Christians with the truth of the Bible, drill down and equip them with answers to these off main charges, right? Such as, you know, where does Jesus say I'm God? Worship me. That's a stupid assertion. But I mean, this is what you get. The second thing is riding that truth train. And what I mean by that is exposing the lies that are in the crimes, exposing it for being the man-made creation of somebody from the 7th century Arabia. When people make stuff up, when people plagiarize writings, when people invent something, that's my dog, when invent things and try to pass it off as being authentic, there's always a crumbs of truth that you find in there that lead you to their deceit. And that's what anachronisms do. Like what they'll do sometimes is they'll get names mixed up, they'll get places mixed up, they'll get the locations mixed up. And this is what we find in the Quran. And I'm going to be talking about that quite a bit this afternoon, this evening. What else? The truth train, yes. We also continue to expose the perpetual butthurt about how persecuted Muslims are around the world and how untrue that is. I mean, to feign victimhood status it's sad is what it is in a lot of ways. And so we'll be pushing this out the next couple of weeks, and we will have an announcement for you. I don't know exactly what to say. I'm trying to find my button here. Let's do this right there. And here we go. I wanted to do that, make sure I got on my Zoom recording, but on speaker. Sorry about that. Okay, so let's go ahead and jump on over to the Bible Bits part of the show tonight. The Bible Bits is where, as I said, to equip believers with confidence that they can trust the Bible in its current written form. Now, tonight's topic is from the writings from a guy by the name of J. Warner Wallace. He does a show. It's called Cold Case Christianity. He used to be a former detective. And what he does is he basically examines the Bible and events in the Bible and uses kind of an investigative approach to it that somebody who is a detective or investigator would normally do. And he wrote this article. It says why I know the Gospels were written early, because one of the oft-made claims is that, well, we don't even know who wrote the Gospels. The Gospels were written so late they couldn't remember anything, and we can't trust what they say because they're filled with embellishment. Then they predict the destruction of the Jewish temple, and that can't happen because we know the supernatural doesn't happen. So what we're going to do is we're going to be looking at this charge and how, and essentially figure out how we know that the Gospels and many of the books of the Bible were written within a relatively short time after the crucifixion of Christ. Now, this guy says that the first criteria he uses to test the reliability of eyewitness is, was this person an eyewitness to what happened, period. Was this person writing this an eyewitness, or did they have access to eyewitness testimony if they were there? Now, if you are a skeptic and you're examining the real claims of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you are going to want to find out, were these people actually eyewitnesses? Because if we look at Mark got his testimony, he got his revelation, he got his gospel from Peter. Peter told Mark what had happened, and Mark wrote it down. Matthew was an eyewitness to the events. He was one of the 12 disciples. Luke, well, Luke interviewed the disciples to ascertain what had happened. If you read the opening chapter of Luke, where he goes in and he says, look, I went in and I've done a careful analysis and I'm trying to write this out in a coherent letter to you so you know what happened is true. Then, of course, John, of course, is an eyewitness to what happened. So a couple things that all of these gospels demonstrate that they were written early, how we know that they were written early, is the following. Number one, we know that the New Testament fails to describe the destruction of the Jewish temple. The destruction of the Jewish temple in 70 AD is probably the most significant event in Jewish history. The destruction of the Jewish temple in 70 AD most certainly would have been recorded by the gospel author Matthew. Why? Because Matthew was a devout Jew. He was very legalistic. So we know Matthew would have recorded this. But none of the four Gospels mention the destruction of the Jewish temple. None. Zero. It's not. And as a matter of fact, if you read the book of John, you go to the Gospel of John in chapter 5, verse 2. Let me pull it out for you here real quick. John chapter 5, verse 2. John chapter 5, verse 2. Here it is. Now, there is in Jerusalem near the Sheep Gate a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Now, how do we know that that is problematic for a late rendering of the Gospel of John? Well, if the we know that the Jewish temple, and we know Jerusalem was destroyed in 70 AD. So if John is writing after 70 AD, how is he saying he's now there is in Jerusalem this pool Bethesda and it's covered by these portico? How can you write that when it had already been destroyed? You can't. So we know just by that one verse alone that John was written prior to 70 AD. We know that these other Gospels were written prior to 70 AD, or they most certainly would have made mention of this. Second reason, the New Testament fails to describe the siege of Jerusalem. The siege of Jerusalem was just as equitably traumatic to the Jews as was the destruction of the temple and of the destruction of the city. That's the Jews were laid siege by the Romans for 3 years, beginning in 67. It wasn't just in Jerusalem. It was throughout the country. You ever heard of a place called Masada? Yeah, them guys. They laid siege to Jerusalem for 3 years and caused almost horrific, torturous suffering in that city for it. We know this, not because the Jews wrote it, they did write about it in the Talmud, but Flavius Josephus writes of this. Tacitus writes of this. So we know when this happened. Nowhere in any of the Gospels, especially if you wanted to equate suffering, the theme of suffering for Christ by Paul and the other Gospel writers, you most certainly would have mentioned this. But there's nothing made mention here at all. So you don't have the destruction of the temple. You don't have the siege of Jerusalem. How about this one? Luke says nothing about the deaths of Paul and Peter. Now, why is this important? We know that Paul was martyred in Rome in AD 64, and Peter was martyred shortly thereafter. Now, think about what Luke wrote about. Luke wrote about the deaths of Stephen, which is kind of an insignificant person when considering the gospel message itself. I'm not saying his life was insignificant. I'm just saying, since, being the first martyr, okay, he's significant. But the only other person who's mentioned that was killed as part of the apostles was James, the brother of John. So if James, the brother of John, who was kind of insignificant, if you're going to be an apostle, for crying out loud, there's nothing insignificant about that. But he wasn't one of the main apostles. He wasn't the apostle Peter. He was not the apostle Paul. He wasn't the apostle Andrew or, Matthew or anyone who we know died before 70 AD. No mention is made of the deaths of these guys. None. And if you're going to mention Stephen, if you're going to mention James, the brother of John, not James, the brother of Jesus, James, the brother of John, something's wrong there. That means that either these deaths of Peter and Paul prior to 63 or 64 and 65 AD, the gospel writers didn't know about it, which is unlikely because, we'll get to that here in a second, because Luke leaves Paul in prison in Rome at the end of Acts. But you would have made mention. They would have gotten some ink. Next one, Luke's gospel predates the book of Acts. So the book of Acts leaves Paul in prison around 64 AD. So that means that the book of Acts had not been written prior to that. So it could have been written 63, 62 AD. But then we know that the Gospel of Luke was written prior to the book of Acts, because it says the first in the book of Acts, it says, "The first account I composed, Theophilus, about all that Jesus began to do and teach until the day he was taken up into heaven, and after he had by the Holy Spirit given orders to the apostles whom he had chosen." That's in Acts chapter 1, verses 1 and 2. So it's clear that Luke's gospel was written prior to the books of Acts. Then we have Paul quoting Luke's gospel in his letter to Timothy. Now, Paul wrote Timothy right before his death. They call these the pastoral epistles. You have 1st and 2nd Timothy and Titus, I believe it is. And we know that Paul, since he was martyred in 64 AD, we know that Timothy had to be written earlier than that. Because you can't write an epistle when you'd be dead. You just don't write very well when you're dead. So we know that Timothy was written. And we know that Paul quoted Luke's gospel in his letter to Timothy. So we know that this letter is written well before then. Paul quotes Luke's gospel in his letter to the Corinthians. Now, we know that the Corinthians is dated no later than 55 A.D. So that pushes Luke's gospel where? Prior to 55 A.D. So there again, we're backing the date of these gospels further and further and further to the cross. Luke quoted Mark and Matthew repeatedly in his gospel. So that means Matthew and Mark had to be written earlier than Luke's gospel. So when you look at these facts and you put this on a timeline, you could say, okay, at 70 AD, out here, 70 AD, the Jewish temple is destroyed. Then you come right here. You have 67 to 70 AD. You have the siege of Jerusalem. Then right here, you're going to have 61 to 65 AD. You're going to have the deaths of James, Peter, and Paul. So we're sitting at 61 AD. Luke writes Acts anywhere from 57 to 60 AD. Then you go before that, Paul quotes Luke 53 to 57 AD. That's in Corinthians. Then we go, so Luke had to be written prior to that. So we back Luke up, and his gospel is anywhere up from 50 to 53 AD. And then since Luke quotes Mark and Matthew, we can back Matthew and Mark almost up to 45 to 50 AD. Now that is very significant. And the reason why I say that, because if Jesus did die on a cross in Jerusalem around 30 AD, and you have gospels written within 15 years of that, that's pretty significant. You're going to be able to trust what is written, because that's how history is done. When you look at some of the great works of how historical facts are established, it only normally takes just one attestation to establish a fact. Two makes it rock solid. And then what you do is you look at, okay, when was this written? And when is the first extant copy that we have of this? And if you look at some of the best works from antiquity, you have nothing close here. You don't have anything close to the time that it was written, and you don't have anything close to the first copy or manuscript that we have on this. But then the argument is often made, saying, well, look, they make some extraordinary claims in the Gospels, and they do. People rising from the dead, people being healed. But a lot of these early writings from, let's say, the Gallic Wars, or other writings that are 1st and 2nd century, they contain all these things too. So why aren't you applying the same standard to them? So the bottom line is that many of these Gospels were written early. We know they were written early, and we can trust the Gospel message, period. All right. Thank you, Mr. Carey, for that. We appreciate you so much. Okay. Let's go into this next segment. This next segment is one of my least favorite segments to prepare for, and I'll tell you why. It requires me to go to the website Ask a Muslim. And when you ask a Muslim about Christianity, you don't ever get a straight answer, or you get an answer that is uses conflation and obfuscation, and in this case, just blatant lies. So let's look at this article that I pulled up here from Ask a Muslim. I call it Why Not Ask a Muslim. And it's titled Crucifixion in the Gospels of Judas and Barnabas and Apocalypse of Peter. Now, when we look at these three supposed alleged gospels, you have people writing using the names of the disciples. You have people using Judas, Barnabas, and Peter, hoping to give them more credibility. This is why when we look at the gospels, two of them aren't from the apostles, and the other two, the author is anonymous, does not mention their names in them. Why? Because they don't want to bring attention to themselves. They want the attention to be focused solely on the gospel message itself. But here, the Apocalypse of Peter, Judas, Barnabas, they're using these names to somehow win notoriety to themselves. This, again, is a sure sign of somebody that's being dishonest. And what is the Gospel of Judas? Well, the Gospel of Judas, we know, is a Gnostic gospel. We know what a Gnostic is. Most people know what Gnostics are. These are gnosis, is a Greek word, where they have this special knowledge. Kind of like, we have this knowledge. You Christians just don't have knowledge of your Bible. We know what it says and what it doesn't say. But the Gnostic, this is a Gnostic gospel, and it was written late 2nd century. So we even know when it's dated. So why are we using this as some type of source to give credibility to the fact that Jesus wasn't, or the supposed fact, let me put it that way, that Jesus wasn't crucified on a cross? Oh, I don't know. Maybe you want to be dishonest. Yeah, that's exactly it. The Apocalypse of Peter, also it's also known as the Revelation of Peter, is believed to be written, again, middle of the 2nd century. Now, we just went through when the Gospels were written, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, within 20 years of the cross. Here you have Gospels being written by people 130 years after the fact. And you're supposed to trust them. Why? Well, they deny the crucifixion. And if they deny the crucifixion, well, then that's consistent with the Quran, 4:157. Do you see how pathetic you have to be in your historicity and your historical methodology if you're going to try to use these gospels or these supposed gospels as some form of credibility for the Quran? Yes, you do. But yet, you still use them, even though you know these people are lying through their teeth. And then lastly, here's that again, the Gospel of Barnabas, the Gospel of Barnabas, that piece of work, we know it was written late 13th, 14th century. We know this. Why? Because like the Quran, it's anachronistic. It gives away so many things and is inconsistent, not only with the Bible, it's also inconsistent with the Quran. Here's what it says. It says the word Christ in the Greek translation for the Hebrew word Messiah. Both these words translated into English mean the anointed one, the chosen one. This word is not an obscure or rarely used word. On the contrary, it is the most famous words in the Jewish and Christian religions. There is no doubt a religious Jew like Barnabas would have been very careful and familiar with this word. But yet, at the very start of the Gospel of Barnabas, Jesus is called the Christ. However, throughout the book, Jesus denies. Throughout the Gospel of Barnabas, Jesus denies being the Messiah. Jesus confessed and said, I am not the Messiah. This is in chapter 42. So how can you be both the Messiah and then deny being the Messiah in the Gospel of Barnabas? In the Gospel of Barnabas, he's got the rulers of the first century. In chapter 3, we are told that Herod and Pilate both ruled in Judea at the time of Jesus' birth. This is not true. Herod did not rule, let me get this right, Pilate did not rule in Judea at the time of Jesus' birth. Pilate didn't become to the power until, when was this, 36 A.D.? Geography. Look at the geography in the Gospel of Barnabas. In chapters 20 and 21, we are told Jesus sailing to Nazareth and being welcomed by the seamen in the town. Who knew that there was a river that ran through the Sea of Galilee in Capernaum all the way up into the mountains of Nazareth? Who knew this? Oh, nobody knew this. You know why? Because you can't sail from Capernaum to Nazareth yet, right there in the Gospel of Barnabas, this emphatic book that says that Jesus didn't die on the cross. Yes. And then there's a major error in the account of Nazareth. Nazareth's not a fishing village. Okay, conclusion, the Gospel of Barnabas is a fraud, just as the Apocalypse of Peter is a fraud, just as, something of Judas. The Gospel of Judas is a fraud. We know this. But here's what the article says. As a matter of fact, the Muslim belief against Jesus' crucifixion is supported by those recently discovered Gospels, which, according to Muslims, were kept safe from distortion, like the Gospel of Judas, which they said Jesus told Judas, "You will exceed all of them, for you will sacrifice the man that clothes me." Okay. Are we talking about the recently discovered Gospel of Barnabas? I mean, I'm really trying to figure out what the heck they're talking about. These things have been around for hundreds of years and were clearly written centuries after these events took place, in which they're claiming to opine upon. So we know this is a lie. This is not how history is done, folks. I told you how history was done in the earlier segment. You go to primary source, you go to the eyewitnesses. If you don't have the eyewitnesses, then you go to secondary sources, people who have access to the eyewitnesses. This is nothing but bunk. And like I said, they leave little crumbs to let you know that they're lying, and this is what he's doing here. This is just desperation. It goes on to say the gospel confirms the Muslim belief that Jesus was not crucified and it was Judas. Really? Where? I don't see it. I just don't see it. You are going to say that Judas died on the cross. You really are going to try to make this claim that Judas died on the cross. And this is actually supported by some of the, your best apologist, Shabir Ali, if I'm not mistaken. He supports the substitution theory. Don't you think the person on the cross would have said something? Don't you think that the people that were there, that were the eyewitness, John, the Apostle John, the mother of Jesus, Mary Magdalene, they were all there at the foot of the cross. Don't you just think that somebody would have said, that don't look like him? Don't you think that when they took him off the cross, that they would have figured it out? This is just, and this is just desperation is all it is. It's just pure desperation. It goes on to say, though many Christian priests challenge the authenticity of the Gospel of Barnabas, the above verses contain the evidence of their authenticity. What verses? What are you talking about? Another gospel reading, the Gospel of Barnabas, it supports the above Muslim belief by confirming that it was Judas rather than Jesus who was crucified. The Gospel of Barnabas? Oh, you mean this demonstrable, anachronistic, historically demonstrable, inaccurate book? This one right here that says that Jesus was the Messiah, but then Jesus denied the Messiah? You mean this book? This book? This is the one you're using? I wish somebody from Ask a Muslim would really just call in and ask me. I've sent them, I don't know how many emails, saying, look, when, and they don't even reply. They don't even reply. And I'm polite, and I'm nice about it, too. I can bring them up, and I'll show them to you. I am not even mean about it. I approach it in a scholarly way. I said, how can you make the claim that the Gospel of Barnabas is, in fact, a clear refutation of the New Testament when we can clearly demonstrate the Gospel of Barnabas is a forgery? Can you please explain it? Can you please tell me how you do that? They don't. Nobody replies. Nobody. And this is the type of scholarship that you get. He goes on to say, in Matthew and Mark, we find out that Jesus allegedly said, my God, why have you forsaken me? A similar statement is quoted in the Gospel of Barnabas, but purportedly made by Judas. Now, the reason why Jesus made this statement, idiot, is because he's fulfilling a prophecy that we find in Psalm 22. In Psalm 22, it begins, David begins with the prophecy, my God, why have you forsaken me? And then he goes on to describe what happens to the Messiah. And in this description, oh, by the way, the Messiah is pierced through his hands and his feet. Oh, by the way, in a practice, this is 1000 BC, that was not to be invented for another half a millennia. Crucifixion was not invented until around 500 BC. David lived 1000 BC. So, morons, this is why this is in here. And Judas did not make this claim. I'm just kind of all done with this. The authenticity of the apocalypse, Peter, is also corroborated by the following verse in the New Testament. You will only observe with your eyes and see the punishment of the wicked. Okay. And then he quotes the verse, Psalm 91:8. The authenticity of the apocalypse of Peter is also corroborated by the following verse in the New Testament. Folks, the book of Psalm is not located in the New Testament. It's Old Testament. So this is stupid. Okay. And this is written by, in Islam for Christians is the name of the person who wrote this. It won't even put their name on it. What a bunch of sniveling little cowards. I guess this is the type of scholarship that you do. This is what you get. Oh, what do we got here? We got a troll in our chat room. Nazis equal and National Zionism, dumb F. We all know you are a Masonic operative. We all know you are a Masonic. Oh, that's because I got my Israeli flag back here. That's right. Here, can you see it? Ah, yes, okay. I'm a Zionist. Okay. Soviet piece of you are a complete fraud. Everyone knows you are an Israeli pig. Oh, I'm not an American. I'm an Israeli. Oh, golly, how'd you figure that out? And you know what? The Jews are also paying me to do this show. Did you know that the Jews, they control all the money in the world? They're paying me to do this. Who is this guy? Purple pill. Wow. Well, you just stay there, buddy. I'll come back to you. Not. Oh, Danke and Und auf Wood. I guess that's some type of German code. Oh, my goodness. The things you run into here. I wonder why he doesn't call the show. All right. Let's see here. We're going to go through a couple of news articles. And this first one is titled, where does this come from? This is coming from Jihad Watch with Robert Spencer. And it's titled, Jerusalem Muslims Chant About Killing Jews Outside of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Now, think about this for just a second. Now, here's what they're chanting. They're chanting Kaibar, Kaibar, and they're referring to this battle where Muhammad catches these Jews unknowingly at the city of Kaibar, and he's able to go in there and take over the city and kill all the men, take the women and children as slaves, as is normal practice. But after, and this is what is just, I don't want to say it's hilarious, but it's actually priceless. It tells us Muhammad was not a prophet. Because in here, I think Robert tells us, okay, here he is. Kainana was the rabbi in the city. He's entrusted with the treasure of the Jewish tribes in Arabia, okay? And Muhammad knows that Kainana has this. So he tells Kainana, he says, look, you don't tell me where the money is, I'm going to kill you. Well, Kainana fesses up some of the money, evidently. And they find out that they're still concealing it. So what they do is they torture Kynana. They build a fire on this guy's chest, and he still doesn't confess, so they cut his head off. Well, Kynana's wife, Safia Bint Hurayra, was taken as war prize, and Muhammad takes this woman for himself, and he hastily arranges a wedding, halts the caravan so he can consummate the marriage. Well, he allows the people of Khaybar to go in exile, allowing them to keep much of their property as they could carry. However, they had to leave her behind all their gold and silver. So this is where they tortured Kynana. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm kind of stuttering here. But the fact was is that Muhammad allowed either it was the guy's wife or the mother-in-law or something like that to cook him and his buddies a goat. Now, think about this. You're just offered a goat to eat, or maybe it was a – we know it wasn't a pig, okay, but let's say maybe it's a sheep. Who knows? Maybe it's a camel, which is against Levitical law also, by the way. I don't know why Muslim. Anyway, said, oh, you just killed my husband, my kids, my brothers, my sisters, everybody I knew. How about I cook you some supper? Now, if you just killed all these people, are you going to allow this woman to cook you some supper? Well, he's a prophet of Islam. Of course he is. Of course he does. So he allows this woman to cook him something, him and his buddies, and one of his buddies dies because she put poison in the food. Now, here's the classic, the best part about it was, Muhammad ingested some of that poison also. And this poisoning that he suffered, he repeats that when he's about to die, telling Aisha, he goes, my aorta feels like it's being cut out from some of the poison that I ate at Khaybar. So when they go through the city chanting, Khaybar, Khaybar, here we come, we're going to come kill you Jews, this is what they're doing at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. But when I hear this, this reminds me of what a joke of a moron Muhammad was for allowing this woman to cook him some food. Duh. Don't speak too quickly. But anyway, and also on top of this, here's the point that I was trying to make. This was taken, where was this taken from? This was taken from the Geller Report. This is on the Temple Mount that they're chanting this. Now, think about this for just a second. If Christians were out chanting death, death to Muslims, or if we were chanting something like, I don't know, remember Kuwait and having your asses handed to, or something like, I don't know. I mean, think about, you know, where the Christians, or remember the Crusades, here we come. Da, da, da. If we would go out and do something like that, we would be castigated as being perpetuating religious bigotry, perpetuating religious hatred. And rightly so, we would be. Because that's what you're doing. But here you're giving Muslims a pass. Why are they giving them a pass? Well, because we have to be nice to them. A couple of weeks ago I was talking about the soft bigotry involved in this for religiosity. This is the soft bigotry for the faith of Islam. Because when you have to allow, saying, oh, well, there's only a small sect of their adherents here, they really don't mean it. Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And it's right there in the pages of the Quran. As a matter of fact, I think that might be a great topic to bring up on the show on Sunday. Why does the Quran teach hatred and religious bigotry to other faiths? Because in the Bible, it doesn't mention other faiths, none that I know of. You know, hate the Jews. You know, the Christians and the Jews are the most vile of creatures. Well, the Bible doesn't say anything about the Buddhists and the Hindus and all these others, the most vile. It doesn't say that. I don't know. Maybe we'll have to work that one out. Okay, France. Our buddies in France. You know, that country that was taken over by Germany twice in the same century within the span of, 30 years? Using the same route? Yeah, that country. You know, France, you know, I feel bad for France, too, because if you think about France sent all of its best and brightest people to Somme Valley during World War I. Millions of them died in that trench warfare. All their best and brightest died. Well, who does that mean that survived? Exactly. So you had this whole generation of people in France being raised by these people who did not die in the Somme Valley. And now they're reaping, and they had to bring in a huge influx of migrants to rebuild their country and this, that, and the other. And all these migrants are starting to take over the population. And here's a good indicator of this. I mean, if you have, I don't know how many no-go zones there are in France, but there's countless of them. And they, you know, they torch, you know, thousands of cars every New Year's Eve. And you can't go in there and put the fires out because, well, they shoot at the firefighters and the police officers who do this. But this article, France, nearly 20% of newborns have Muslim or Arabic first names in France. France is one of those countries that it's not going to be the France that we know. 20 years from now, 30 years from now, it's not going to be the France that we know. It's going to be completely different. And it's sad to say that. I really am sad to say that because, you know, there's a lot of culture that comes out of France, but this country, they've lost it. They do not have any kids there. I think the birth rate in France is like 1.3. The replacement birth rate to replace your population is 2.1 children per couple. Theirs is 1.3. There's no way. There's no way to reverse it. No knowable, demonstrable model. So they're on their way out. And this is just a good indicator of it. Okay. This next one really caught my eye because I had mentioned this a couple weeks ago where we were talking about these grooming gangs, Muslim grooming gangs. And this article is from Bare Naked Islam. UK political correctness on steroids when the crimes involve Muslims. Here it turns out the Greater Manchester Police ordered officers to investigate other ethnicities, not just Muslims, who might have been involved in the Pakistani Muslim pedophile sex grooming gangs, rape and forced prostitution of underage British white girls. And this is just a video. I'm not going to play it or talk about it, but it's just Paul Golding going in and talking to him about it, saying, why are you forcing the investigation of these other groups when you know they weren't involved in this, when you know that they were these Pakistani rape gangs? But then when you look in the next article, UK victims of Rotherham Muslim pedophile sex gangs tell you what the media and politicians won't. And listen to the words of one of these survivors. Now, this is what's so sad. This is one of the girls. And here's what she says. As a Rotherham Muslim grooming gang survivor, I want people to know about the Islamic extremism which inspired my abusers. Grooming gangs are not like ordinary pedophile rings. Instead, they operate almost exactly like Muslim terrorist networks with all the same strategies. As a teenager, I was taken to various houses and flats above takeaways in the north of England to be beaten, tortured, and raped over 100 times. I was called a white slag and a white cunt as they beat me. They made it clear that because I was a non-Muslim and not a virgin and because I don't dress modestly, that they believe I deserve to be punished. They say I had to obey or be beaten. Fear of being killed and threats to my parents' lives made it impossible for me to escape for about a year. The police didn't help. And the reason why the police didn't help is because they're a bunch of cowards. All of those social services that should have been in place to protect these girls are a bunch of cowards. Why? Well, they don't want to be labeled. They don't want to be called racist. They don't want to be called bigot. They don't want to be called homo or Islamophobe. They don't want to be called names. They have to defend themselves. You don't have to defend yourself from those charges. All you have to do is open the Quran and point to verse 98:6. As a matter of fact, I'm going to do that right now. Hold on a second. Chapter 98, verse 6 of the Quran. Let me read it for you, because this is what Allah, the God of the universe, had to say about me. It says, 98:6. Surely the unbelievers among the people of the book and the idolaters will abide in the fire of hell. They are the worst of creatures. Christians and Jews, people of the book, are the worst of creatures, and he's going to send us to hell. So if we are the worst of creatures, you can do anything you want to us. Why? Because it says that the Muslims are the best of people. Allah is also telling them this. So when you're taking little girls out and you're raping them and you're going to tell me that I'm a hater, I'm going to open up your book and I'm going to stick it in your face and I'm going to tell you, okay, explain this one. Bubba, your God is telling me that we are the worst of creatures. So why? What makes it unlawful for you to do this? I can find all kinds of other passages in there where it makes lawful to rape women, those which your right hand possesses. These guys are just a bunch of pervs, is what they are. I mean, underage girls, oh, well, we know where that comes from also. Okay, last one. We have a deputy sheriff speaking the truth here. Now, I pulled this one up off of, imbecile, Nazi, Israeli spy, Mossad. Okay. No one listening to Zionist lies and propaganda, moron. Damn Soviet Jew. Everyone knows you're Israeli. Man, that's quality entertainment. I don't know why that strikes me funny, but that just, well, it strikes me funny. Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to play this video by this deputy sheriff here. I'm going to put it up here on my Zoom. I got to bring it up here first. Got to share my screen. Okay, sharing my screen. And here's what this deputy has to say about the Second Amendment. I absolutely love this. This guy's spot on.
Sure. As you can see, I'm here. I just want to personally.
Could you pull that mic up a little bit? Is that better?
Okay. I just want to personally and publicly go on record supporting this resolution before us this evening. You know, guys, it's simple. Like a lot of them have said, the Constitution needs no explanation. It's been enforced for several hundred years now. It's easy to understand. It says what it means. It means what it says. And the last time I read the Declaration of Independence, it specifically reminds all of us that we're endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, which means God-given. Among these, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And that governments were instituted among men specifically to secure our God-given rights. And it says when government becomes destructive to these ends, meaning when they go above and beyond trying to secure our liberties and trying to take them, it's the right of the people to alter or abolish that government, either by voting or ultimately, God forbid, to use our Second Amendment rights to protect ourselves from tyranny. And I'm just asking all of y'all to unanimously join our sister counties of Wilkes, Surrey, Stokes, Lincoln, and Cherokee and get on board with this thing and publicly demonstrate to us that you're willing to uphold and honor the same oath I took when I put my hand on God's word and held my other hand up to him and swore that I'd give my life to defend that Constitution. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but regardless of what y'all do or don't do, I'm not going to enforce an unconstitutional law. I'm going to...
Standing ovation. Applause.
I'm going to protect the people of this county regardless of what's done here. So I'm just praying. I've been praying about this thing all week that God would touch y'all's heart and say, hey, let's get on board. Let's do the right thing. Let's let these people know that we're here to support them, and we're not going to allocate any personnel, finances, resources, or facilities to infringe on their liberties. Thank you.
Right now, there's a culture war against the Second Amendment.
All right. There we go. That was pretty good. And the reason why I play that is my son is a deputy sheriff. My son learned from his daddy how important the Second Amendment is, and he carries 24/7. Gets on me when I don't carry, come to think about it. But when you're sitting there telling a county that you are going to start making more draconian gun laws, and you have a deputy standing up and saying, look, you can go ahead and make them all you want, I ain't going to enforce them. Well, God bless you, sir. You got to like that. end that deserves right there. Uh-oh, it didn't play. Come on, hit it. There we go. All right, you got to love that. Okay, we're going to go to our next segment. Our next segment is going to be the Truth Train. Now, when we play the Truth Train, we got to do the intro to the Truth Train. And this is a doozy. Let me see here. I got to find it. Oh, my goodness, I can't find it. Where is it? There it is. Okay, I'm sorry to my peeps over here on my Zoom room. That's one of the things that trolls do is they report you for copyright infringement. Like, they really give two ripping rits rear ends. But anything to silence the word from getting out. So I just played a couple seconds of that. I think there's a rule is you can't play over 10 or 15 seconds. I can't remember what it is. But anyway, okay, this next one. Truth Train today deals with anachronisms that we find in the Quran. Now, our friend, a good friend, a Facebook friend of mine, I've spoken with a couple times, Anthony Rogers does a really good job of nailing, the title of this video is Muslim Apologists Say the Dumbest Things, and he's talking about Yusuf Estes. This time, so I'm going to let Anthony do the talking here because it's absolutely priceless the way he slices and dices our friend, quote unquote, Yusuf Estes. Here we go.
Just like Anthony. Fire requires oxygen and fuel in order to burn, so likewise Islamic propaganda requires ignorance and naivete in order to thrive. Ignorance on the part of those who would purvey Muhammad's message and naivete on the part of those who would receive it. Take, for example, popular Muslim apologist Yusuf Estes. He makes so many dumb comments when trying to knock down Christianity and prop up his tottering religion, all while still managing to gather a crowd eager to accept every silly comment that comes out of his mouth, that he has earned a spot on this episode of Muslim Apologists Say the Dumbest Things. Yusuf often claims to have been a Christian minister before abandoning faith in the Lord Jesus Christ in order to submit to Muhammad and his partner, Allah. As a former Christian minister, Yusuf would have heard that Christianity started in Jerusalem and from there spread to Judea, Samaria, and the outermost parts of the world. In spite of this, Yusuf believes that Christianity started in Rome. Far more interesting than that idea, or at least far more entertaining and revealing for present purposes, is what Yusuf believes about the who, the when, and the where of Roman Catholicism.
The Catholic Church was in business about 300 years before Jesus was born. It's on the website. Don't go like this.
Boy, have I been mistaken. I guess I need to read a bit more. Tell us what really happened, Yusuf.
The Catholic Church was really started in Rome by Alexander the Great.
So, according to Yusuf, Alexander the Great went to Rome in order to establish Roman Catholicism 300 years before the coming of Jesus. And I suppose he got there in a Boeing 747. And since this was over a millennia before Muhammad spawned the religion of terror, no doubt the armor-clad, sword-wielding Alexander was able to pass through airport security with great quickness, perhaps as quickly as Muhammad could order the assassination of someone who made fun of him.
Okay, Anthony is just what he does. What he's doing here, and I didn't want to play the whole video. He's basically illustrating how silly a lot of these arguments Muslim apologists make, and how anachronistic they are. Notice he's, and I watched that video that Yusuf did, the full video of what he's saying. He has some woman, she's up to a microphone, and he makes the statement that, well, the Roman Catholic Church began, 300 BC in Rome. Well, number one, the Greek Empire, was at its height at that time. But number two, how can you have the Catholic Church, the church that proclaims Christ's death and crucifixion on a cross, exist prior to three centuries prior to Jesus living? That is an anachronism. And we find these anachronisms all over the Quran. And that's what I want to do here, is just give you a brief description. This is what Sunday's show on the Real Interfaith Dialogue was all about. It was about illustrating these anachronisms. Now, the one that I covered initially stems from the Quran chapter 3, verses 35 through 45, or 33, actually it's 33 through 45. And where you have here is you have a guy by the name of Imran. Now, Imran, who is Imran? Imran in the Old Testament is described as the father of Aaron. And who was Aaron? Well, Aaron was the brother of Moses. Aaron was the brother of Miriam. And Imran is described as having a wife. Now, you got to follow this bouncing ball. I know it's hard to do on radio, but follow the bouncing ball. Imran has a wife. His wife has a girl. Her name's Mary, Miriam. Now, this girl then is taken care of by her uncle, Zacharias. Or Zechariah? Does that name sound familiar? This is all within the same grouping of verses. And this woman, Mary, you have Imran, Imran's wife, husband and wife. She has a daughter, Mary, who's also, Imran is also, when we find in chapter 19 and in chapter 66, I think it is. I wrote it down. I don't want to be inaccurate here. People say, he's a liar. He doesn't know what he's talking about. 19:28 and 66:12, we find Imran as their father. We also find Aaron as the brother of Moses in 20:30. So we find all these things in the Quran where they're all connected. But here in this verse, 33 through 45, we also find that this Mary, sister of Aaron, daughter of Imran, whose wife, as a wife, is also the mother of Jesus. I know a lot of you are scratching your head on the, wait a second, how long did Moses live before Jesus? 1,400 years, just saying, 1,400 years, 1,400 years off. And the rescuing device, there's always a rescuing device. The rescuing device is, used by Muslims, is that, well, that is just the way that Muhammad, and this is what I posed to the Muslim that we had on the show. The rescuing device is, well, that's just the way that they spoke to their kin back then. Well, number one, no, it's not. That's not the way that you find people referring to other people within the Quran. You don't find it. You need it to be there, but it's not there. Number two, they use the excuse that, well, Jesus is called the Son of David all over the New Testament. And he is. Because why? He is a descendant of David. He is in the line of Judah. Well, that would also put Mary in the line of Judah. But no, 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 no. Here's what they say. They say, no, Mary is, just as Jesus is the Son of David, Mary is a daughter of Aaron. And that's not true. And the reason why it's not true is because we know that Aaron is a Levite. He comes from the tribe of Levi, not Judah. So that excuse does not work. Any excuse that they bring up is desperation to hide the abject ignorance of Muhammad. Because if you even jump over to chapter 19, verse 28, it says, O sister of Aaron, referring to Mary, O sister of Aaron, your father was not an evil man, and your mother was not unchaste, referring to Mary, because it says in the verse 27, so she came to her people with him, carrying him. They said, oh, Mary, indeed you have brought a strange thing. O sister of Aaron, your father was not an evil man, and your mother was not unchaste. And then look at chapter or verse 29. And so she pointed him and said, they said, how can we talk with him who was in the cradle an infant? Where does that come from? That comes from the infancy gospel of Thomas. So here, you not only do you have something that's anachronistic, but also, number two, you have something that was clearly plagiarized. I'm sorry. Borrowed is the word I was told to use. The other anachronism comes from Surah 12:20. It says, Joseph's brethren sold him for a miserable price, for a few dirhams counted out, in such low estimation did they hold. A couple problems with this claim. Number one, the dirham is a derivative of the Greek drachma, a currency that would not come into existence for, what, 1,000 years after this? It didn't exist prior to the 700 years after this. It didn't exist prior to the 12th century BC. This means that the Quran makes the claim that Joseph was sold into slavery using a currency that hadn't been invented yet and would not be invented until 7 centuries later. Sorry, I got this. I've been talking all day. Today in class, I tell you, we had a great time. We were talking about why we celebrate the Martin Luther King holiday. And it is, you know, when you talk to kids, they have an idea of what, you know, why we celebrate it. They have an idea of what he did. But until you play that I Have a Dream speech of his and you go through it piece by piece by piece, saying this is what he's illustrating there, this is what he's doing here, and you show them what a great speech was, what a motivating speech this was, it makes it worth it sometimes as a teacher, all the work that you put into it. Okay, next one. Oh, also, I would say about these Greek drachmas, this dirham shtick that we find in chapter 12, verse 20. The second problem with this is it says sold him for a miserable price, a few dirhams. A dirham is a coin. They did not have coins at this time in history. Coins were not used. And I went to – the great part about this is I went to the Islamic Awareness website. I wonder if I have it here. I went to the Islamic Awareness website. No, it wasn't. This is a different article. I went to the Islamic Awareness website. It's supposed to be the clearinghouse of everything Islam, or scholarly Islam anyway. And I looked up this article, what their counterclaim was. And they said, okay, well, here are some coins – pseudo coins that were used, that they could have been used to pay for Joseph's, to buy Joseph out of slavery. But what's so priceless about this is it comes from a book where the title says Currency of Mesopotamia Prior to the Usage of Coins. It's basically what the book said. This is what they used prior to using coins. Number one, a dirham is a coin. And number two, they didn't use coins back then. And number three, the Quran says that they did use it. So you're out. And that is an anachronism. Chainmail. David produces chainmail in Surah 34, verses 10 to 11. It says, we bestow grace upon aforetime on David from ourselves. O ye mountains, sing back. Praise Allah with him and ye birds also. And we made the soft, or the iron soft for him, commanding, make thou coats of mail, balancing well the rings of chain armor, and work your righteousnesses. Problem. Chain mail was invented on a different continent a half a millennia later. It was invented by the Celts in England 500 years later. David did not have chain, so on a separate continent, thousands of miles away, and 500 years later. But yet, here in the Quran, we have chainmail, anachronism. I didn't explain what anachronism was at the outset, did I? An anachronism is something that should not be in the time period in which it's described. And Yusuf Estes did a good job of illustrating that by saying, you know, the Roman Catholic Church existed 300 years prior to Jesus Christ living. And we know this is not true. That's a historical idiocy. That's historical. It's ahistorical. Let's just put it that way. You don't listen to people like that. But yet, Yusuf Esrus is one of the most popular Islamic apologists out there. Yeah, that guy. All right. Here we have crucifixion practiced in ancient Islam, Egypt. Here you have Sur 1241 and Sur 2071. The method of execution by crucifixion was practiced during the time of Joseph and Moses, according to the Quran, by the Egyptians. It was practiced by the Pharaoh on so you had the cupbearer and the baker, and the baker had his head lopped off, according to the Bible. And Joseph predicted in his dream that the cupbearer would be restored. But in the Quran, we read that the baker was crucified. And then in chapter 20, verse 71, we find at the time of Moses, Pharaoh is crucifying people. Here's the problem. Joseph lives in the 18th century BC. Moses lives in the 15th century BC. The Persians did not invent crucifixion. The Persians did not invent crucifixion until the 6th century BC. Again, you're off on a practice. And here's the thing, you know, everybody believes Muhammad. Why? Well, because, you know, the Romans crucified people. Allah tells them to crucify people in 533. The Greeks crucified people. The Persian Empire crucified people. So they must be okay. Everybody crucified people. And Muhammad, being an illiterate, not only reading-wise, but also a historical illiterate, would not have known that. But he's off by 1,000 years. And we know this. This is an anachronism. This is how we know. This is one of several reasons why we know the Quran is not true. This is why we ride this truth train. Moses and the Samaritan. Moses and the Samaritan in Surah 20, verses 35 to 88 and 95. You have a Samaritan leading the people of Israel to create a golden calf with Aaron at the base of Mount Sinai. We've all heard this story in the book of Exodus, where Aaron makes a golden calf, and the Israelites begin to worship this golden calf after God had led them out of bondage in Egypt. But the Samaritan is helping Aaron do this. But the problem is that the Samaritans did not come into existence until the Assyrians carried off the northern kingdom in 721 BC. The golden calf, the story at Mount Sinai, the book of Exodus describes a time period 1400 BC. You're off by 7 centuries, Muhammad. 7 centuries. The Samaritans did not exist when this happened. They weren't even a thought up group when this happened. This is 700 years off. But yet, it's in the Quran, another anachronism. Moses and Haman, according to Surah 28, 5 through 8, it says, and we wish to be gracious to those who are depressed in the land. It goes on to say, to establish a firm place in the land. And so Pharaoh, Haman, and their hosts at their hands. So it has Pharaoh and Haman together, is what it does. Okay. The problem is Haman did not live at the time of Pharaoh and Moses. And here's where Muhammad gets confused. He's saying, okay, well, Haman hates the Jews. The Pharaoh hates the Jews, so they must have been acting together. But that's not true. We know that Haman comes out. He's that guy that we find in the book of Esther that wanted to destroy the Jews. He was Persian. He was not Egyptian. This is why we find in all the Egyptian writings that we have, we do not find anybody by the name of Haman. Why? Because it's a Persian name. It's not an Egyptian name. This would be the equivalent of finding somebody named Fernando in the Soviet Union. Or maybe finding a guy by the name of Bjorn in Italy. It does not happen. Those are not names associated with those cultures and with those times. You know, today it might happen because of mass transportation. But back then, you do not – okay, here would be a great one. You would have somebody by the name of Jing, like an Asian name, found in Germany. It's not going to happen. This does not happen anywhere in history. But yet, right there in the Quran, we have another anachronism. And there's all kinds of other anachronisms that we discussed on Sunday in Sunday Show. If you want to refer over to Sunday Show, Sunday Show is posted up in the Blog Talk Radio webpage there, and you can go in and listen to it. I got a real crisp audio that I had played for it. Imbecile Nazi Israeli spy, Mossad. Thank you, Purple Pill. You are all over it. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and close out the show. I'm not sure if I can play my song here. Oh, yeah, here we go. All right, God bless you. See you all next week. All right, everybody over here, thanks for coming.
Each seated in the American citizen is pride in his community as an expression of all that his country stands for, individual independence, with respect for the rights of others, born of the concept that all men are free and equal.
Jesus saves us. Bye-bye. Okay, bye-bye now. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
God bless y'all. We'll see you next week.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.